call the October 2nd meeting, regular meeting, where am I? Sorry, excuse me. I call, yes, the October 2nd regular meeting of the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors to order. Now we'll adopt the agenda. No, first we do a pledge of allegiance. Where's that hiding? Thank you. We will begin with the pledge of allegiance followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Yep, I will just take it all together. Take that on there stuff off.
Now we'll adopt the agenda for the meeting. Are there any recommended changes or updates?
No.
Without objection, the agenda is adopted. Now we'll hear the county administrator's report.
Mr. Vice Chair, one thing before that, we have a couple of special presentations here to do first.
Yep, so, sure do.
I think we'll have Mr. Sheridan, Mr. Mel Sheridan come up, and if you'd come up as well with them to help them through the presentation.
Thanks, okay. Mr. Riley, Deputy Chairman, if he's so kind to join me.
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir. Walk us through it. Okay. We're going to be presenting Ms. Brown with this certification. I've got a presentation I'm going to read, but I'm going to ask if Ms. Shanika Brown will please come up and join Mr. O'Brien and I. And I will tell you what this is all about. Would you please stand right over here? Ladies and gentlemen, this is a certification, and I'm going to step back. Certification for Master Deputy Commissioner of the Revenue is being presented to Ms. Shanika Tinsley Brown. Ms. Brown is being presented this certification from the Weldon Cooper Center of the University of Virginia. This certification is presented to a select few deputies across the Commonwealth who have this year completed at least 3 years of service as a deputy commissioner, completed multiple classes administered by the Weldon Cooper Center on a variety of topics to include the roles and responsibilities of the commissioner's office, tax assessments on both real estate and personal property, land use, tax relief, etc., etc. The recipient must have also attended both state and district commissioner of the revenue meetings to interact with their peers from around the Commonwealth. Ms. Brown has completed that and received this at our conference last month, and they asked that it be presented to the recipients by the Board of Supervisors or respective town councils, and I couldn't think of a better place than to ask our Board of Supervisors and Mr. O'Brien to do just that. So would y'all please join me with a round of applause. But add one other side note, because I thought it was really timely. For the first time in the history of the program, or the certification program for commissioners of the revenue, both a mother and a daughter received this certification in 2019. Ms. Carolyn Tinsley, who is a resident of Fluvanna County that lives down near Columbia, who works in the Albemarle County Finance Department, also received her certification along with her daughter, Shanika. It's pretty cool. Yeah, I thought so. Can you hold one tight, Mr. Bryan? Thank you. I'm going to set this down over here. It was really neat. They did not know that they were father and daughter, and I did, so they recognized them. Governor Northern spoke to the assembled group, so it was pretty cool. Mr. O'Brien is on. I'm going to ask if I could also be joined by our Chief Deputy, Ms. Kelly Hudgens, Ms. Sarah Pullen, and Ms. Lauren Sheridan. And I'll jump in there. And I'm going to see, Tony, would you stand please between me? There you go. That works perfect. We're on. All right, I'll take just a moment. But this is also kind of a first. The Commissioner of Revenues Association Office Accreditation Program. What's that all about? In July of 2019, this year, the Commissioner of Revenues Association, in conjunction with the State Compensation Board, initiated an office accreditation program for commissioners across the Commonwealth. First time we've had one. Those counties and or city commissioners' offices were required to meet 12 core requirements to apply for the accreditation. Some of those included: the commissioner and the deputies in the office must have completed and passed the required courses of master certification program as administered by Weldon Cooper. And they administer bubble tests. It's a lot harder at 60 to pass those than it was in 2025. But the office must have a minimum number of employees. We are required to have at least two because we have five people, but we try to make sure everyone has that opportunity. A minimum number of employees are designated as certified master deputies of commission, deputy commissioners. Ms. Hudgens is a master chief deputy commissioner. Ms. Brown is a master deputy commissioner. Ms. Sheridan is a master deputy commissioner. And Ms. Pullum is just started that program about a month ago, and she's well on her way. So, in addition, the office must have policies in place for the appeal, provide taxpayers for consistent, defined course of action when disputing an assessment. The office must have implemented written customer service policies, a written confidentiality policy, a policy for handling freedom of information requests, etc. In addition, the office must adhere to and maintain strict compliance with the standards of ethics of the International Association of Assessing Officers. Finally, the commissioner's office must have certified that there are no inconsistencies, shortcomings, or legal actions in the office. I'm proud to say that we were one of 29 counties out of the 93 that did receive this accreditation for the first year, the 2019 year, and that is in absolutely large part due to the work of these four ladies. I mean, I just get to kind of ride along on their coattails. True story. Kelly's been with the office since 2004, and I could not have a better staff or better master chief deputy commissioner revenue. So I would like to ask Mr. O'Brien if he'd present that to Ms. Hudgens.
There you are.
And this team right here.
I know has always been very proud of all this work and making sure that his staff gets all the accreditation and all the training that they need to better serve our taxpayers.
I'm extremely proud, and I will leave with this note, because we got to go back to the office since we left Mr. Hodge in charge. Ms. Pullen's going to be 3 years to get through this, but we do have another person that's going to receive this award that is temporarily on loan to the county administrator's office.
Full
Ms. Caitlin has passed all of her requirements, and we're going to submit that, and I'll ask Mr. Dahl about this time next year if he'd join me in presenting it to Ms. Lease, because she is a large part of our success, too. She was with us for 3 years, and nice to know she's not far away. Thank y'all.
Okay, now we'll adopt the agenda for the meeting. Are there any recommend? Oh, we've already done that. Okay, now we'll hear the county administrator's report. Mr. Dahl.
Administrator's report. Okay. Okay, so since we're kind of talking about staff and giving staff some kudos, so the one thing, Victoria Melton, the financial services specialist in the finance department, she was selected from the Virginia Government Finance Officers Association for a certificate program course scholarship for $225. There was one of only five. She was one of only five certificate program scholarships awarded from the VGFOA, and she is a first-time Fluvanna employee to receive the awarded scholarship. So, congratulations. So you know, just by doing this, it'll give her opportunities to take more finance-related classes just to make the finance department even better than it already is. So that'll be a great thing for her and others that want to, you know, kind of follow in that program as well. So a few Parks and Rec September events. So there's a partnership between Parks and Rec and the high school cosmetology class on the right. Thursday, September 19th, five seniors from the senior center went to the high school to get manicures, haircuts, and all that stuff. And the students at the cosmetology program had to be a level two or three or better. And their plans for future endeavors like this between the seniors and cosmetology. And it's a great way for the youth and the seniors to kind of engage with one another, and I think it's a great thing. Also, there's a tween night again, which is 12 to 15-year-olds, where they played board games, ping pong, socialized, probably drank all sorts of sugar-ridden sodas and everything, and got all jacked up. That was on Friday, September 20th. 24 youth attended. And just remember, that is not specific to anyone that lives in Lake Monticello. Individuals, youth in that age range could attend that. So it's a great thing. And the next tween night is Friday, October 18th. A couple announcements. So if you remember back at the June 19th Board of Supervisors meeting, the board as a whole said, let's enter into the State Scenic River Program for both the James River and the Harbor River. Well, the Department of Conservation and Recreation sent us a letter back saying, yes, great, we're ready to study and do evaluations of the rivers. They started getting dates set in September and October, but as you know, with the weather and how hot it's been and the lack of rain, they are not going to be able to float the rivers to do the study this fall. We had some dates planned. Both the Hardware River's low, the James River was too low in the section that they wanted to go. So we're going to have to try and postpone it until like early next springtime to do that, to do the evaluation of the river. We don't have to do anything additional to get back into this. It's just a little bit of a delay to do the study of the river. So just one thing for that, a little postponement. In addition, there's a statewide candidates forum that's going to be sponsored by the Fluvanna Chamber. The statewide candidates forum is October 21st between 6:30 and 9 p.m. It's going to be at the school board building, the school board office building. You'll have the candidates for House District 65, House District 58, and State Senate District 22 there. And I believe everyone's going to be there as well for that forum. So just kind of a little update on that. We also have information on this on the counties. It's going out through counties fan mail. And Kelly, do we have it on the website at all, too? We do.
We have something linking to it.
So anyone that's interested, you can go to the What County website, or just if you check fan mail, you get more about it. One thing also that we want to talk about. So there was a proposed rate increase for the FUSD system back in 2019. So when Mr. Wayne Stevens, back in 2014, it had been a while since the FUSD system had any rate increases. So he went through a financial model and determined, you know, to get the system, you know, sustainable and kind of get it, you know, funding, getting some funding revenue to do projects, maintenance, and operations. So there was a rate increase that the board approved July 2nd, 2014. There was supposed to be a subsequent rate increase in fiscal year 19, which was last fiscal year, which never occurred. You know, talking with some of the FUSD folks, talking with Public Works, from what I understand, the FUSD Advisory Committee, and I'm not sure if Mrs. Booker can maybe speak about this, from what I understand, there's not a lot of, I think there's maybe two folks on the advisory committee right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I said, a rate increase was proposed, and I just want to get some direction from the board, since the board is the governing body, ultimately, of the sanitary district. Do we want to go through, and do they want the county administrator and staff to start doing some investigations into what we need to do the rate increase for the system? Obviously, you know, if we have the public utilities folks here, there's lots of things that are happening with the system that need to be upgraded. Just a prime example, one of the big producing well, the Omahundra well, there was a big repair that's happening on that well right now. And there's some other wells that could be hooked up to the system as well to make it a longer, more sustainable system, as well as maybe even increase the water capacity in that system. So as you see there, we have the rates that were there from 19, there was a rate in 1986, what was approved in 2006, what was approved in 2010, what the board approved in 2014, and then Mr. Stevens had a proposed rate increase in fiscal year 19, and those were the amounts. Now we can go back through and look at some of that, but I just want to get with the board to see how they want the staff to move forward with that.
How much are we going to be making with the 42-cent raise?
You know, and Ms. Booker, we haven't done a whole lot to figure out, to get into the whole of the financial model of what the 42 cents will bring us. Mm-hmm. Like I said, when Mr. Stevens, I looked at one of his financial models that he had going back to, I think it was fiscal year 17 or 18. So we need to go through and update it, but you know, do we want the board to, does the board want us to look into that? I know as part of the big master water and sewer plan for the county that the county's engineer Dewberry is doing, they're kind of looking at some of this. So, but that's not gonna be ready for say another, you know, year or so. So do we want to maybe try and get some type of maybe a minor increase in place now, or do we want to wait until the master plan and the rate study's done?
I think you wanted to have that rate increase to cover any cost of repairs and the eventual replacement of pipes.
And like well,
it's running about what, 2% increase, something to take or give on that.
Yeah.
In essence, 14 to 19, about 5 years ago. So
yeah.
You know, I think facts speak for themselves, and it's Moselle's district.
And like I said, if the board wants us to come up with, you know, more concrete numbers of what it's going to do, I mean,
right.
Like I said, we just want you, you know, do you want staff to look into this more?
Okay. I would say yes.
Okay. Is that a head nod from all the board? Okay. We'll certainly do that, and we'll try and kind of buff up the revenue model that was set in place and start plugging in some more up-to-date expenditures and get with some of the public utilities folks to see what type of you know, repairs, maintenance, mm-hmm. upgrades they need to do in the system too, so we can plug that in
right.
to get a better idea of what's going to be required. So we will certainly take a look at that. Another thing, we got some good news again from CVAC on the fiber project. So when you look at the fiber project, they kind of break it into three steps. There's one, step one is called make ready engineering. Step two is make ready construction. And step three is fiber construction. So make ready engineering, obviously locations, doing all the necessary engineering on the ground. Make ready construction, heightening the poles, strengthening the poles, doing all that. And then fiber construction is actually hanging the fiber on the poles. And very soon thereafter is, you know, hooking the fiber up to homes. So CVAC sent out a letter to the county recently that, in addition, so they already said they're going to be moving on the Zion substation. Also, we got a grant for the Columbia substation. They're also going to be moving forward with make ready engineering on the Kids Store area, which is kind of the southern, southwestern part of the county, kind of in the Cunningham district. Also, and I've got some maps I'll show you too. Also, kind of as part of, as the way they're kind of pulling it down from the Zion area, kind of coming south, they're also, and kind of going into the Columbia area, they're also doing some partial make readies on in Henson Store and what they call the Cunningham substation, which isn't the same Cunningham as the voting district, but I'll show you the map. And unfortunately, Ferncliff in the Kids Store area, they're still going to move forward with it at some time, but they don't necessarily have any type of, you know, partial make ready construction or make ready engineering at this point. So
killing
sorry,
me.
Mr. Sheridan.
You're killing me.
Yeah, I know. Also, one thing too, so CVAC and on the Firefly Virginia website too, and it's kind of hard to see, but if you go to their website, there's something here called check availability. If you know you're in the Central Virginia network or in their electric system, you can go in and you can put your address in there to see where, kind of where you are in their system and where it is, if it's make ready, if it's, you know, construction, if you want to get emails, you know, and have them kind of respond back to you, you know, when it's kind of coming to your area, they'll certainly do that as well. Well, let me go back to the next map here. So the map on the left here, I know the board saw this before. This is kind of the breakout of all their substations. So they have the Zion substation here, which is kind of south of 250 and west of 15. They have Henson Store, which kind of runs down 15 a little bit, kind of out into the kids' store a little bit. Ferncliff. But as they, if you remember, so Zion substation was first. Then they ran some line down here a little bit so they could connect up to the Columbia substation. So they're hitting some of this red, which they call the Cunningham substation here. But they're going to start moving into this area now here.
And so Henson's is basically Bobby's Road and Route 15.
Yeah, correct. It's probably Church a little Road. More west Bobby's of the
Church
story.
Yeah, Bobby's yeah. Church Road and Route 15.
Yeah, but so
it's moving.
Yeah, so they're moving down, and like I said, they're going to start doing make-ready engineering for the whole kids' store area, and there may be some for some of this other, what they call the Cunningham area, too, to get there. And I haven't heard, but I would not expect that the lake is maybe too far out behind that, too. So I think CVEC is really pushing this along, and I have a feeling that they kind of gave a five-year window to get that done, and I think at the rate that they're going, that they're going to really get this done. You know, the only other thing then, too, here is, and the map on the right, again, kind of breaks down to the blue is kind of like the make-ready construction and fiber construction, and then the yellow is kind of getting into, you know, where they're kind of prepping the poles, but the blue was more so just kind of, it's coming, and unfortunately, like I said, the Ferncliff and part of the Henson Store area is a little further out, but they're really pushing along with the fiber project, and I think it's going to be great for Fluvanna. You know, we have a couple little gaps in there in the Dominion area, and we're going to have to look at to see what Dominion and maybe some other fiber providers can do teaming up with Dominion on their poles. So I think it's going to be a great thing for the county, and CVEC's really, really stepping
up on
this.
Can you just go back to the phases again?
Yep.
Great, thank you.
Yep. And then, like I said, this is kind of showing what areas are there. So they're moving right ahead, moving right along. Obviously, the county and the EDA went into an agreement with them. So once the Zion station is fully operational and they're paying taxes on that, then the county's gonna have to provide, and through the EDA, provide some incentives back to them to get fiber going.
So how many people will be
per our agreement?
Yeah, how many people will be not in the CVEC in Dominion?
So just as a ballpark, there are roughly, in the county, there's roughly 8,500. So let's say there's 10,000 homes, 8,500 of them are CVEC customers. So about 1,500 non-CVEC customers.
Mm-hmm.
Non-CVEC homes.
And who's working with Dominion, too?
So no one right at this exact moment, there's no one stepping up, but through some things in the General Assembly, Dominion has to provide a path forward to work with internet providers and fiber companies to get fiber on the poles in those areas or make some type of availability for that. So that's something that's coming along. So I think it's great for Fluvanna that we'll have, you know, homes will have up to 85% capacity to hook up through CVEC, and then we just have to work on that last remaining 15%. So that's that for the fiber project, and just a little update. So the next upcoming BOS meetings, Wednesday, October 16th at 7 p.m. is a regular meeting. Wednesday, November 6th at 4 p.m. is a regular meeting, and then Wednesday, November 20th at 7 p.m. is a regular meeting, and all those will be in the courtroom. Unless something comes up like it did today, where Ms. Treadway said, you know, we may have court going a little bit longer than usual on this day, and she didn't really know, so that's kind of why we're in here. They ended up ending court a little bit early, but we, you know, we were kind of in the process of having things ready to go here, so we just kind of kept it here. And through some of the stuff we're going to be discussing, it will probably be better anyway. So that's all that I have for the board.
All righty. Thank you, sir. Apologize for being late. We'll now open our first round of public comments. Anyone wish to address the board should come to the podium. And state your name and address. Please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time? Seeing none, I will now close the first round of public comment. All right, we have no public hearings on the docket, but we do have an action matter. C, signed crossroad water sewer capital budget carryover. Ms. Twisdale.
Good evening. This is just our carryover that we do each year for the Zion Crossroads project. Our CIP automatically rolls over. Zion Crossroads is in a separate fund, so we have to actually come to the board and request that we roll these funds forward each year. Basically, our requested carryover is $6,072,136.30. As you can see from the slide, this is the beginning budget, extended budget, and where we're at the end of the year.
And I'm just going to add one thing to the board to that. So just remember, this dollar here, the $8.6 million, that's just what's been already budgeted. We know that the board's going to have to put more money into the project at some point because we debt funded a certain amount and we put some cash into it, but we knew that there was going to be a cash contribution. So the 8.6 is kind of the initial amount, and at some point, probably before the end of the fiscal year, finance will be coming back to the board kind of for, you know, what that final, I don't want to say final, but what the, you know, getting close to total cost for the project's going to be to get some funds coming from fund balance to cover that. Because remember, we only took out debt proceeds for about $8 million of the project, and it's going to be a, you know, $10.5-11 million project. And we always had that $2.5-3 million kind of set aside kind of in there, just kind of a noted earmarked for the project. And I know Mr. Weaver too, you had always asked just kind of looking at total costs on the project. So kind of like we did before when we brought forward some change orders, this is kind of showing, and I'm just going to kind of go down to the bottom here just so you can kind of show where we are. Ms. Wizzell, I'll let you.
Yeah, so right now with the project, as you can see, we still have $3 million earmarked down there for possible funds that we will need for the project. Now, it looks like right now our estimate's $2,170,000. So we're hoping we're going to come in below that $3 million, but we'll just have to see as that progresses.
So if you see this red here right now, it's still the total project cost to date at this moment is still $11.5 million. County already put 831 cash in, so the remaining funds needed were 10.6, debt proceeds were 8.5, so you're left with the 2.1. But as we said, we put $3 million aside, so hopefully we kind of stay within that $3 million, unless we want to make some marvelous, as we get into the next conversation, do some big elaborate tank logo and painting or something like that.
Alrighty, are there any questions?
Sure is. Land right away. I noticed that we budgeted $150,000, yet we went over about 200%. I wonder why we would miss that much, or are there funds coming from a different area that makes it look so bad? That's land right away.
Yep.
$150,000, and then you're down $297,000.
Yep. So one thing, if you see here, Mr. Weaver, there's a line called contingency, and it shows a beginning budget of $1.5 million. So when the budget was set from folks previously, there was some thought that there was going to be some fee simple land and some right-of-way acquisitions that were going to be given at less of a cost than what we ended up settling for. So that ended up coming up below than what we thought.
Quite a bit, right?
It was quite a bit. You know, it was a good amount of bit. But as you see, we've got a good amount of contingency that we kind of baked into this at $1.5 million. So pretty much when finance goes through and when the board approves this, they're going to make everything, you know, basically level out. So there's going to be no budgets that are over budget. Like for here, the over budget by $297,000, that's going to be a zero budget. We're pretty well done with land acquisition. We have some things to go still, but for the most part, land acquisition is basically done. We have a few.
So we have some holdouts still.
We have a few cats and
dogs. We have pending condemnations.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
And our legal fees also increased due to the same thing.
Yeah, and some of this too, you know, some of the legal fees, they were going to maybe be budgeted and paid out of a different area when the original budget was set up, because maybe we were going to use an outside firm to do some of the legal stuff on this. Well, Mr. Payne's office was able to handle some of the real estate acquisition costs for the county on this. So
where was that budgeted in then?
That was probably budgeted under professional services.
Okay. Because legal costs you hit $165,000.
Yeah, there was no beginning budget because that was budgeted in some other thing. And once we determined Mr. Payne's office could do that, it's just kind of a transfer of funds. But it wasn't that we weren't expecting there to be any real estate acquisition costs that we had budgeted for those costs. It was a kind of a transfer how it occurred. So.
Well, and it's better if you show them because it's a little bit more transparent instead of just saying professional services, because then people come back and say, well, what does that mean?
You know,
so at least this way you can identify what it was.
Thank you.
Yep. Any other questions? Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the carryover of the unexpended FY19 Zions Crossroads Water and Sewer Fund capital budget in the amount of $6,072,136.30 and reappropriate that amount to the FY20 Zions Crossroads Water and Sewer Fund capital budget.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We're moving closer to getting water for folks. Well,
I'm okay.
I'm wondering.
I'm okay.
Appointment. Yes, ma'am. Presentations. D, Charlottesville Area Alliance Update, Mr. Curtis Putnam.
Thank you, members of the board. About a little over a year and a half ago, the board passed a resolution supporting the Charlottesville Area Alliance. The CAA is a coalition of area agencies that seek to make our area an age-friendly community. The CAA's primary purpose is to provide leadership for and to develop an age-friendly community through educating, advocating, engagement, planning and evaluation. The partner organizations work together to create an age-friendly community by developing a common understanding of the needs and issues facing us, developing policy recommendations, and joining together to encourage the implementation by government, nonprofit agencies, and the general public as well. As the chair of the Fluvanna Partnership for Aging, I was appointed to be Fluvanna's representative on the Charlottesville Area Alliance. Since that time, I've been elected to serve on the CAA's steering committee and also serve on their education committee. The CAA has committed to use the World Health Organization 8 life indicators of an age-friendly community to measure the performance and impact of the CAA's efforts in the community. And these are buildings and outdoor spaces, transportation, housing, social, respect and social inclusion, civic participation and employment, communication and information, and community support and health services. The CAA partners are Albemarle County, Alzheimer's Association, CARR, the City of Charlottesville, Seaville Village, Dementia Friendly Charlottesville, Fluvanna Corson, Homestead, Job on John, Legal Aid Justice Center, Lindsay Institute for Innovations in Caregiving, Martha Jefferson House, Meals on Wheels, Region 10, Senior Statesman of Virginia, Centara, Martha Jefferson, the Center, which used to be the Senior Center, Thomas Jefferson Planning District, United Way, UVA Health System, UVA Thrive, the Virginia Health Department, and Westminster Canterbury. So it's quite a wide-ranging coalition. Over the past year, CAA has conducted an area-wide study of the needs of our senior population. And thanks to Parks and Rec, a lot of the folks in Fluvanna got to participate in that study. The results have identified three major areas in our area. The three major areas that they see as a great need are adequate, reliable transportation, affordable housing, and respect and social participation. Three teams have been formed to develop action plans for each of these areas. I will serve on the Transportation Action Committee. The goal is to identify a set of action items for each of the three areas to guide the Charlottesville Area Alliance's advocacy efforts and provide a framework for area government's efforts in these important needs. The first meeting of the Transportation Committee will be on October 14th. As soon as these action plans are developed, I will submit them to the board for consideration and inclusion in our 2020 comprehensive plan. The partnership, the Fluviana Partnership on Aging, has advocated for some time for a study of improvements to our existing transportation arrangements, primarily through John, for some time now. And the administrator's office has undertaken a study of some possible transportation enhancements for Fluviana County. And I'm hopeful that the CAA's action plan will help guide these efforts as well. Fluviana's participation in the Charlottesville Area Alliance has allowed us to influence the inclusion of our unique needs in the area's planning for seniors. It has strengthened our connection to area agencies and heightened our profile with important actors in the area. I'm hopeful that our participation in the CAA will continue to enhance the goal of making Fluviana part of an area-wide, age-friendly community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Buddy.
Are there any questions?
Yeah, I want to ask, who's representing CAA on the regional affordable housing? Is it one person?
Regional affordable housing?
Yeah, that Thomas Jefferson is spearheading. Do you have a president?
Well, right now the chair of the
chair,
the chair of the CAA is Chip.
Okay, Chip is on it.
Yeah.
All right.
And he's spearheading that, and
okay.
He has some staff working on those issues.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly what they're doing for the affordable housing. You talk about the project here in Fluviana?
No, the big one in Charlottesville that Thomas Jefferson is
doing. I don't really know the details on it.
Okay. The other one, did you say the third one's respect and participation?
Respect and social
and
inclusion.
Socialization. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you.
And that has to go back to social isolation, because as the population ages out, you know, we expect that by 2030, something like there'll be a 20% increase in the population over 80.
Over 80?
Mm-hmm.
I hope I'll be in that population.
I'm going to be there soon. And then the study that they did, it took them a year, and it was quite comprehensive.
Mm-hmm.
So they identified a number of areas that were important. With those three, transportation, housing, and social participation being the top three that we needed to look at.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Putnam. We do appreciate your service, sir.
Thank you.
Next is E, water tower logo and color option update.
So just kind of a carryover from last week a little bit, just with some more, getting a little bit more information. We got some more ideas, and we still have more time if kind of what was submitted, some additional stuff submitted. We still have probably two more board meetings that we can still approve some things. So again, like I said, the budget doesn't include anything for the logo. It just includes the base color, and depending upon what the logo looks like, it could cost more than the 15 to 30. So the one thing that we have to do, we must choose a tank color. The board, by the next meeting, we must have a tank color decided on, like the base coat of the tank itself. The logo, we can decide that by November 16th, but they're expecting that they're going to probably start painting the whole tank itself sometime probably early to mid-November, getting the base coat on. And then, like I said, by November 6th, if we have some kind of determination on what we want to do as far as a logo, they can kind of get that all mocked up and everything from there. But so we'll show you some of the different options. So I want to thank Ms. Harris and Mr. Rothmel. They kind of worked with getting some of this stuff together, reach out to the schools. The only thing that we didn't do, Mr. O'Brien, is do the crowdsourcing, because the schools were pretty gung-ho, and if there's something that we don't see in here, we can certainly go with that option moving forward. But we kind of left some of the other options we had. So one thing that we kind of got from the board was to kind of stick with the baby blue color. So everything that we're kind of showing you is kind of with some type of baby blue color in mind. Now we can tweak the variations, and the board may say, you know, I don't want baby blue, I want robin's egg blue, or I want heavenly blue, or whatever it may be. So
we don't want anything to do with that place.
so one thing we kind of talked about before too, so this is kind of like the Fluvanna County logo. Now we may be able to go back to the firm that kind of did this logo for us. I mean, this is a little more comprehensive, and we could go back and get some of these colors instead of the instead of it kind of being a different variations of yellow in the background or green. We could get them to go solid on some of this, but this is the logo in a real large format. If we went this size and this color right there, that would be the $15,000 to $30,000. You can forget about that number. Right. That would be way off line. But like I said, if we went with something more solid, and like I said, they can mock up the size too for what we want. But just to kind of show you a variation, here's the same logo again, but just a little bit smaller. I mean, so you can see, you know, depending on what we want to do, we could definitely, you know, stretch it or make it fit the tank accordingly. So that's just kind of one that we kind of currently use for a lot of Fluvanna County materials. We're going to go through now a bunch of school options. So we kind of gave the schools just some specifics on what they needed to do. We gave them the website to kind of put stuff in and play around. Mr. Rothmel reached out to the art teachers, and they were gung-ho to do some of this stuff. So there's different color options. So I remember someone said they wanted to just kind of do like an outline of Fluvanna County. So someone did something that was just kind of welcome to Fluvanna County. Option two, and they kind of stayed within the same variation a little bit. This was the same thing, just welcome to Fluvanna County, but, you know, making the background some blue. Obviously, we can change this to whatever we want if the board says I want some other type of color. This was something where they're trying to kind of get, you know, some of the rural nature of Fluvanna in. They put a tractor tire and some corn in the background and kind of kept the same outline going. Again, same thing, but established in 1777. This is the same type of thing, but just if they want to go with color. And the letters should be black on this, but I don't know why they're not showing up. But anyway, just imagine that with the letters black. Now, if we want them to maybe kind of go back to the drawing board, or if we want to say, you know, we want to go completely to crowdsourcing, I don't know if there was a misunderstanding or what, but when they sent out variations, they sent us kind of variations of one type of thing, whereas maybe we say just go completely crazy and just show us variations of everything. So we could still go back to them. They're obviously, you know, they've got lots of skills and talent and they could do this, but it's going to kind of be up to the board how we want to move forward. And we can certainly go to the crowdsourcing. And again, just going back to a few that we showed the board before, this is that same Fluvanna County that's on the very bottom of the first slide, but it's just the...
What does it say at the bottom?
It says Fluvanna County, and then it says established 1777. Oh. It says Virginia. So if, you know, with kind of resizing it, you can make it look a little different too. And we could actually pull up some of the actual just flat files of these as well.
And it's just on one side.
That's kind of what we had talked about, just doing it on one side, kind of like how Louisa County is kind of pointing towards, 250 and 15. If we kind of did the same thing, kind of kind of facing back to the Louisa County tank, you know, kind of facing the same direction that way, but have our logo look in that direction. You know, we could go on the south side of it, but you're kind of getting into, you know, you don't necessarily want them necessarily just, you know, and you have one whole side of the tank empty, because you could do three sides of the tank, but generally you would most likely only want to do two sides. So it's like which mm-hmm. direction do you want those two sides to go? So if you're kind of facing, you know, kind of 64, then you got the back side really kind of facing off to nothing. just kind of a lot of land right now. So our thought was to do maybe something a little nicer on one side, so it kind of shows it off a little better. And again, this is just if you want it to live in at large. And then just to show you that the Parks and Rec logo. So that's kind of what we have from the schools. We could certainly have them
have
go.
We didn't have no Fluco.
What's that?
We didn't have no.
No one gave us a Go Fluco, so we could go back to them and say, "Go wild."
Go wild.
Yeah, I didn't have.
Go wild, and I sent Kelly the information.
Kelly got it. Okay. So, if, like I said, if the board wants us to say, you know, like just kind of go back to the drawing board a little bit and go wild, and then go prompt.
We've got a few kids that have, like, gone to the BCU art school and mm-hmm. finished yeah. up there that are into art.
I like the year on it.
Abby Stewart now, but I know she was she was an art major up at Fruit Hill Orchard. Okay. They graduated from BCU. She might be in her last year.
So one thing we were talking about too, I know Mr. O'Brien, you talked about the whole crowdsourcing thing is where you pay a certain amount and you know, whoever wins the logo basically gets paid for doing it. I thought it might be a benefit too, and getting the board's idea, but if high school students do the same thing, and if they get the winning logo, then they could get paid and submit and get the $200 or whatever.
Absolutely.
Whatever the dollar amount is as well.
Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm. Any?
I might have to go get my colored pencil.
I need $200.
Like I said, is this blue? And I can go to the website if you all.
Fading.
Yeah,
nice.
I mean, we still have some information going to our engineers. I know, Ms. Eager, you asked what is the specific color of the Department of Corrections right. tank, and they're looking into that to see what it is if we want to try and match this. But this kind of blue is kind of the standard color. It's typical of those tanks, and it looks kind of similar to Louisa's. And I think I talked to Roger Smith too, and I was trying to find the color that he said they had at the Fork Union Sanitary District tank, but it's very similar to this as well.
Yeah, I would say tell the schools to go wild, and I think, you know, certainly the Heart of Central Virginia, which is one of our mottos, if you would, and great place to live, work, learn, and play. That's, you know, if they can incorporate, it doesn't have to say those words, but just incorporating some of those ideas.
Okay. Other
Flucos, yeah.
I mean, it's not like we're not the only ones of those around anywhere.
That's mm-hmm. right.
The flying F's.
But you have to consider when you're traveling by that, you can't get into too much detail because you're not going to
be able to see. Oh, I agree. No,
so you're going to need some real good, bold type.
Yeah.
And some of those that they started off with, boy, it sticks right on your eyes. Yeah, and blue is kind of sometimes more difficult. I like blue, but I think we need to think of it as perspective from somebody going by. Mm-hmm. And I liked your idea of putting the date on it. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good
one. Yeah.
And you don't want much on it, I don't think.
Well, I mean, like I said, a lot of these, too. I mean,
I would have home of the legendary Mr. Weaver. Established.
Hey, that's all right. Make it bold.
Wait, were you before the
born?
County?
No. 1777.
All right, so we'll go back, but I mean, is this blue? Does the board hate this blue, or is
no,
it?
It's
no,
nice.
That's fine.
Yeah. You want it still larger than? I mean, I think still. The perspective needs to be still a little bit larger.
I think he's talking about just the tank itself.
Just right the tank now. Base yeah. color.
That's okay. kind of what
color
we're talking
for the
about. Big tank.
Just
not,
so it's
not the emblem.
Okay.
Yeah. We can certainly do that. And like I said,
we could just do like blue and then a gold line with little stripes in it so it looks like a zipper. Unlocking your future in Pluto.
So the thing that... Maybe Mr. O'Brien needs to submit a...
Let's go, Brian. Sleep on that one. We'll discuss that one. We'll discuss that one. Yeah, sleep on that one.
You want me to put my hand on your mouth?
Well, I know certain people's minds might go to other places, but...
Okay, well, moving forward.
Before we go off the deep end, let me get out of this. So anyway, we'll come back with some more options. But so by the next meeting, we have to say, as far as tank color, yes, we want this color. And just to kind of show you what we're talking about. So, I mean, so if you see here, I mean, you go here and you can, I mean, they have a gazillion different blues that you can go with. I mean, so there's just about every variation of blue. So this is the company that we're using. This is the company that provides the paint, and they've got all these fancy names like Robin's Egg and Fountain Blue and Star and Horizon Blue. So
I like Horizon Blue.
You like Horizon?
I just like the name. I don't care what you
call. Well, there you go. That tank's in Horizon Blue if you like that.
What do y'all think?
Well, I think, depending on what we get back in terms of some of the other logos, that variation in color might matter a little bit.
Yeah, it may.
Yeah, and you don't want to get it too light when you're moving along. I mean, they're nice to look at, and they're nice on a sheet of paper and all, but in the texture of where it's going to be, it should be different in my opinion. Well,
the nice part about it is ours is going to be close enough to the road that you're going to get a nice big look, but we don't need to have it too bright because we don't need to be working too many wrecks up there.
Yeah. Unless you want something bold like that.
That's nice.
All right, anyway, we'll come back to the board with some more options. We'll reach out. Kelly's got the info for the crowdsource. We'll tell the high school students to just go just crazy with the logo and incorporate some of the things that we have in some of our other literature as well. So. So the next,
are we good with everything on that right now? We don't have to make any kind of vote on that.
There's no decisions that need to be made right at this moment unless you actually said, I want to go with this blue, but no.
All righty, next. F, 2011, master plan update, park maintenance information. Mr. Spitzer.
So, and now before Mr. Spitzer goes up, this is kind of just a follow-up from the last board meeting. The board asked Mr. Spitzer to kind of come back, talk about what he's doing at the park, kind of the master plan for the park, and just kind of go into a little bit of what some of his plans are for fields and other amenities.
So I gave each one of you a copy of this in front of you. As we go through, if you look at your copy, anything red is not existent, and anything blue is currently existent at the park. And that was how they did it on the master plan when they did it in 2011.
And when he said red, there's little
red circles. Mm-hmm. So like this is a pavilion. This is new. You know, this is not out there. But like these three soccer fields, they're blue. So they were existing in 2011 before this was done. Just an overview. Like the park. New elements that we haven't incorporated yet in the park would be like here would be a pavilion, an access road from here to the ball fields. Mm-hmm. It's number 26 on your paper. There's an access road that goes to the back where, you know, you can still have your big events out here. And I know like Old Farm Band, they like to close the park down for soccer and stuff. That would eliminate that because you'd have two entrances in and out of your park. The water activities, rec centers down in this area, right here. Mm-hmm. And two new ball fields are up here. That's two NCAA ball fields that you'll see when we go through. That would be right here. So I guess we'll go through, and as I go, feel free to ask me questions, and I'll try to answer best I can. So this slide, I wanted to let y'all know what was existing in park inventory and what's been added since 2011. So everything in black is the same, and then everything in green's been added. So we got the Pleasant Grove House and Museum, Welcome Center Museum's been added. The outdoor there's an outdoor bathroom at Pleasant Grove Park behind the Pleasant Grove House, in front of the Farm Museum. The Farm Museum, the 18-hole disc golf course. I've added two scoreboards at the ball fields back there. There's a community butterfly garden that's been added at the park. An access road and a parking lot behind Pleasant Grove House. That's 30 spaces back there. And then the stage. That's what has been added since 2011 at the park. Can you go back for one second? Sorry. I highlighted the potable water well in red because currently the high school takes all the water. So it may be where there's a need for a new well or something in the future. But currently, as it goes, that well won't support like a rec center out there and the high school. It barely supports our irrigation to our soccer fields and the high school.
So, and I even know when Mr. Stevens was here before, then there was talk too that of building some type of water tank out, you know, for the parks, just because so they could, you know, during the off times when the school's not using water, they could get capacity in that tank, and then they could water the fields.
We would use the backflow from that tank to water our fields, so that way the school's not taking all the water out of the pipes. We would have water, and we would collect the water in the holding tank when the school's not using water. So there would always be a continual flow of water for us to irrigate the fields and stuff like that.
So this well is really putting out a lot of...
It is. I mean,
we hooked up to it, I think, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Mr. Stevens got the whole park hooked up, the house, the community garden, everything. That summer, the high school, when the chiller went off, it sucked water from inside the house, the community garden, the bathrooms, plus the irrigation system, and it took it all to the high school. So we have to wait 2 hours for the pipes to fill back in after it sucks it all out before we have water. So we disconnected from that, and we're still not potable water at the Pleasant Grove House, in the bathrooms.
How much water do you have available then?
We have a holding tank in behind the bathroom currently, and I think it's an 80-gallon tank.
How many gallons a minute can you produce?
Oh, that's not.
That's above his pay grade. That's above.
Huh? That's a probably worse question.
No, but we need to know some of those.
Yeah, we.
And that would be something I have to.
Once we get some of the. So Brian Estes is the new assistant director for Public Works for Utilities. Once he gets up to speed with a lot of our systems, we'll have him come here and we'll have him talk specifics to that.
And I will tell you this much: there is a well in behind the softball field. Between the Pleasant Grove House and the high school softball field, there is an existing well that water, I was told, comes up out of the top of it.
Well, yeah, I don't know about that. I know when Mr. Stevens here, too, we went behind the pole barn in the back and cleared out an area and did some perk tests, and I know you can perk the well back there, too.
Roger Black is the one that told me about that, said there's an existing well that's been dug, it's just never been used right there.
I think we know.
Evidently, it must be pretty rare.
You said that between the house and
the softball field at the high school.
Okay.
All right, in those woods between the garden and the high school, it's in those woods.
It must be on the other side of the bottom then.
I've never seen it. Roger's the one told me. Just catch with Roger. Roger
can
walk right through.
We'll go check it out.
That wouldn't be too hard to find out how much it's producing. I think that's what you need to know to begin
with. Well, I mean, that's one that's existing. If it's still usable, it may be,
look at the courthouse where that was done.
I mean, right now, the one we're using is non-potable water for the community garden and the house. You know, we put signs up, non-potable water, wash your produce for you. You can't really eat it when you pick it, kind of thing right now. So these are elements that are in the 2000 master plan, and I'm going to go over everything in blue. You'll see on the CIP slide on the next slide. So everything in blue has been put in as a CIP project. Of the 30 things, there's 11 that are blue that have put in through the CIP. So this slide is CIP requests from 2014 to current. Anything that's checked has been done. The amphitheater's checked. I don't not sure that was a total CIP project because it was grant money and some funding, and it doesn't have a top on it, so it's telling only a stage. It's not a true amphitheater.
Huh.
You'll see a picture. I have a picture of it later, but it's not a true amphitheater. It's just a stage. I hate to talk bad about where it's at. There's no trees. There's no shade, and people will bake in the summer. You know, sitting out there watching a concert unless they take tents up.
What's the square footage on it?
The stage?
Yes.
What's it?
30 by 30, I think.
It's nine. Okay.
Yeah, it's good size. I mean, it's really nice. But it has no top on it. So if you do have an event, you have to rent a stage to put it, you have to rent a top to put over the stage for your event. So there's, you know, if you would do a rental, they have an extra rental that they have to incur to actually have music on the stage currently. If you do it in the evenings, it's so hot out there, like it's just, it works on equipment, you know what I'm saying? When you don't have a tent over a stage, you're trying to get. So that athletic ball fields and lighting, you can see it's they've been put in since 2014 and not funded. I put in athletic scoreboards. I took it out of the CIP and put it in my budget, and that's how I got those at Pleasant Grove Park. You can see the basketball court. You can see all the stuff. The Crofton Park, that got taken out of the CIP because we decided not to go that route anymore. That's why that didn't show up anymore, the electronic scoreboard. I was asked to pull it. Well, it didn't meet the 50,000 requirement anymore, so that got pulled out. And then the public restroom, I hesitated to put a check mark there, but we do have a working public restroom at the park, but it is not in the location of the master plan, which would be right here. Currently, it is back here. So we do have a working bathroom in the park, but it's not where the master plan called for. But we do have one out there. You could, yep. Next slide. So I wanted it just to put, this is how much we ask for every year in our CIP, you know, between just under $5 million to just over $5 million usually annually is what we ask for the CIP when we do it. And I can break everything down if you want what we ask for, but we do that every year. But I just wanted to show you kind of what we ask for. And I think my next slide.
So are you saying if you just if you had all of those asks right there, you'd be more than able to complete everything?
Yes. So those 11 things are in my CIP that I've been putting forward the past 3 years, I believe.
Yeah, all those items right there with the black.
Since I've marks. Been director, that I put them forward, my thing would be maybe one every other year or one every 3 years, but show that, you know, actually reinvest. And I'm going to show you why maybe it's a good idea to reinvest one or two things into the park as we go.
Now, the one thing I would say that we could take off would be the tennis courts, because that's the one thing at the high school that's open to the public.
Okay.
So they've got 6 tennis courts within a half a mile of where we're wanting to build more tennis courts.
Yeah. And the schools, high schools will allow?
They're open.
Okay.
They're open to the public, I believe, 24/7.
They were in the master plan. That's why I have right. tried to move them forward.
That's the only thing. I mean, we can double check, but okay. I'm pretty sure that the public.
I can talk to, Mr. Morris.
Mr. Morris,
I'll talk to him about that and see what's up with that. So the next slide. So this slide is our revenues from 2014 to 2019. I wanted to show you this because we're consistently 105 to 113 maybe, you know, within that range every year. We can't grow because we can't rent out any fields. We don't have lights. So November, we're dark at 5 o'clock. Pleasant Grove, the fields cannot be used in November when time changes.
Right.
From 5 o'clock, there's no lights out there. So we can't use the potential to raise money because we don't have lights. And you know, we're just dark and we only have 2 lit fields, and the youth sports, they take those from 6 to 9. You know, it's tough. So we can't have any adult leagues. You know, we could run adult leagues out here at 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock after, you know, the kids are done with their programs if we had lights. But even in the summer, now, you know, 8:30, 9 o'clock, it starts getting dark. You can't use your fields, and that's when soccer, you know, is basically over in the summer. So lights would help bring revenue, I think, through a couple different ways, through rentals and through recreation program fees. it's a way to be able to generate some more money for the county, possibly.
Do you have you prioritized the things that you would like to include in the park? What would be the first thing, second, third?
So we need, I've always thought we need a playground for everybody. There's not really one in the community that's inclusive. So that's why that's one of my things that I have forward to put forward, is an inclusive playground for everybody. Lights, I think, should maybe move from a priority. I think it's in 2023, maybe it should move up. And that way we can start using the fields we currently have longer, and then maybe start adding some fields as we go. Did that answer?
Yeah, you have a Parks and Recreation Board or advisory?
We do, we have an REB board, yes. We meet next week, I believe. Okay. They wanted to prioritize the spray park last year. Great, but it's not going to bring money into the county. It's great for people to have something to do. Mm-hmm. I tell you, they want it because Monday we were running our sprinkler system. Two kids were stomping on our sprinkler heads using it as a spray park. We had to yell at them and ask them not to. Not having a fence around our soccer field, that hurts. I think it's the only field we have in the county that doesn't have a fence around it, to be honest with you. So there's no way to keep horses, bikes, kids from, you know, stepping on our sprinklers. I think they're $80, $90 a piece when we have to fix them, you know, stuff like that. So there is a need for some of these things that, you know, I'm trying to ask. I don't try to ask for things that I don't think is a necessity. Not a necessity, but would help.
Yeah, where's the intergenerational building?
So that would be down here, in this area.
Okay.
And I think that's pushed out to near the end, so it'd be what?
It's fallen off a couple of times, pushed it back on.
Yeah, it keeps getting pushed kind of back to the next to last year within the cycle, I think. It's a 5-year cycle.
Is the Planning Commission looking at the CIP stuff the next work session?
The 8th,
October 8th. Mm-hmm. So all the departments and agencies submitted their CIP requests for the next budget process. So they're going on to the Planning Commission. So the Planning Commission will have a work session on the 8th to kind of start reviewing the CIPs that are going forward. And Mr. Spitzer's are kind of the same. He's got the same thing. He's not adding, you know.
And I'd be happy to rearrange if we come to how we want to rearrange them. And it would be great if maybe y'all give me input. What you think?
It's all about
it's
money.
More important to go out there first or second. Yeah. You know, I don't know. Question. But the only reason I put this slide, I wanted to show you that there is a way for us to raise more money for the county, generate more money for the county. But we need a couple facilities or lights or something to be able to do that.
I think the one thing, too, I mean, you know, we're not going to get $500,000 in revenue from it, but it's going to bring people to the county. As the county starts to grow, we're going to get more people coming in here. They're going to see the park, they're going to come to the park, and as they come to the county, they're going to spend money in the county.
I mean, when businesses and people move into a county, one of the things they look at is what's your recreation facilities you have, you know? Do you have somewhere to go work out? Do you have somewhere to go, my kids go play? You know, do I have somewhere to go hiking and hang out with my family when I'm having off day? You know, that's kind of important to people.
The nice thing about the athletic fields at Pleasant Grove, if we have the ability to run tournaments, and I've told y'all about this before, when we had those guys come in for the baseball tournament, that was an all-day thing. If somebody's there all day, there are a multitude of things to do at Pleasant Grove while you're not playing the game, rather than just hang around in the back of your car.
You know, go play frisbee golf.
You can go play in the river. You can go play in the river. You can go play frisbee golf. You can, you know, it's just, it's a lot of different things to do. That's one of the reasons I think we could start to host little league tournaments, soccer tournaments.
If we can, I'm looking into on our baseball field. We have a permanent mound right now. One of the trends I've seen is taking removable mounds out there. So if we take out the permanent mound and put a removable mound, you can actually have a softball game on a baseball field because you don't have the hump. You know, it takes out the danger of the ball hitting the hump going over.
We played softball on it.
You can.
3 weeks ago.
But if you're going to have kids playing a game or something like that.
If you have a little league, you can could double up and use all four fields.
They could use both fields out there instead of just having to be able to warm up on that field. So I'm looking into being able to do something like that. Even in our baseball field at Carysville, you know, if they're not using that one, the softball would be able to use both of the fields for tournaments. So they could have a double tournament right there. Baseball. Baseball could take the, you know, two rubbers and go from here to there, and they could have a tournament on both fields going at the same time. It could help bring more people into the county.
Those portable mounds are about
$1,500 to $1,500,
depends on if you get real nice ones, you're going to be looking at $1,000.
So that's something I may bring forward in my budget, you know, next year for the budget proposal. I might look into getting three or four the mounts so we can do something like that to use our fields for multiple things. It's just for one. So this slide just represents some things I put in the budget over the last three or four years that I've been doing it that haven't been pushed forward. One of them, the soccer field turf, it did get budgeted for, but I did not proceed with the second field because we do not have the proper equipment to mow the first field. And when you don't have the proper equipment, you're taking fescue grass and you're putting it on turf grass. Well, the turf grass is going to turn into turf fescue. You know what I'm saying? It's not... You need a roller. It's a special type of equipment to be on turf. So, instead of that, we should concentrate on getting our fescue up. Really, you know, getting the irrigation system up, getting seed and fertilized, and getting on a schedule, and we can get the fescue up and making it look really nice. Mm-hmm. That's why I took that one out. The electronic message board, be great to have out there. Get rid of all the signs, but it's not a, you know, not a big necessity. But it'd be great. You could actually make money renting, say, a happy birthday for somebody. You know. Going down by the high school, we say happy birthday, Jane, or whatever. $5 a day. You know, it could be a type of a revenue driver in a way.
Well, it'll let people know, too, what events may be happening that day or coming up. Mm-hmm.
Like, say there's a special meeting, we could post a special board meeting on that, you know, or something like that. It could just not serve only Parks and Rec, but the county as a whole. I put on the water tank for the irrigation system. You know, that's, we kind of talked about that earlier, where, you know, the tank would fill up and we'd backfill the irrigation for water. Soccer field fence. I mean, like I said, the kids were stomping on the sprinkler heads. People drive, it's going to happen. You know, even if it's fenced, it's going to happen. And then entrance gates, we put that down there too.
Have you ever had issues with somebody driving on it?
A couple times.
That's the only thing a fence is going to help.
A couple times, and I've seen horses riding there.
Kids
are going
to jump a fence.
Dogs. Horses. I've had dogs in there all the time. They dig holes. They poop. I had a lady, I said, can you please get your dog off our soccer field and go to this open field right beside here? She threw a ball down and said, my dog's playing soccer. I said, thanks, ma'am. Have a good day. I can't. What can you say to stuff? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I can't keep her off of that. So, I mean... That's some of the problems we face here or there. You know, not every day, but here and there. Mm-hmm. Deer poop. You know, what kid wants to step in deer poop when they're getting ready to kick a ball on Saturday morning? Right. You know what I'm saying? But it's going to happen, or don't, because you're out there. This slide are non-CIP projects that I've worked on to complete at the park since I've been director. I just kind of want to show that we are trying to do some things at the park. You know, construction of covered picnic shelters, that's at the playground. That was a lot of our Eagle Scout projects. I've been working on the disc golf course with some public works and some volunteers.
And your dad.
My dad. The installation of the fitness trail is not at the park, it's at the dog park. But that was donated to us without funds to put it up. So my staff and public works took 2 days to go put it up. Those are things that I've ran into. I'm getting money to buy stuff, but not money to complete it. So in order to complete, I'm completing it. It makes it a little tough. Mm-hmm. So I think as we move forward, we need to look at that a little bit too, you know? But that just could be how somebody budgeted. And this last slide, you wanted to know how the park is maintenance, Mr. O'Brien. So in 2006 or 2011, all maintenance staff was taken from Parks and Recs and transferred to Public Works. So when that happens, this prevents me from having direct supervision to tell somebody, I have to have this done today. I can only request something to be done, like ball fields, drag, mow, or whatever. They're usually done through work orders. Say we have a rental at the pole barn, Melinda takes that. She'll take the rental, she'll put it in as a work order for Public Works, and we hope that they come mow it the day of or the day before the rental. If I don't see them out there, I usually call them and I say, you know, kind of what's up, but I can't direct somebody to go do something because they're not in my department, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I can't, like, our needs change, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. As a parks and rec person, rain, whatever, our needs change. day to day.
And Mr. Spitzer has got more specific needs from the Parks and Rec fields and facilities than maybe from the public works crew. He's going to have very specialized type of park maintenance when sometimes the public works crew and the grounds crew, they're just go out there just to just to get it all
done. You could not rent the baseball field right now because it has too big
grass. To live. Well, there's grass in it, and that's from not being drugged during the winter, some, and not being maintained. I have on here like the maintenance plan for seed and fertilizing. I haven't seen it been done in a couple of years for Holy Birds. I don't know why. Like, that's not my department. I can't speak on that. But I came up like a possible solution. Me and Eric and the director of Public Works, Scott, we're talking. Possible solution could be maybe take my current part-time person for trail tournament to a full-time job. So they would be responsible for dragging ball fields at the park at Carriage Brook and mowing those, mowing the soccer fields. Mowing the park, maybe the dog park.
Doing trail maintenance.
Trail maintenance during the winter. You know, those are big winter things that when the trees are dead, it's easier to see in the trails. Do a lot of trail maintenance during the winter and through the summer, but concentrate on the fields.
So we have 7 fields right now that we currently maintain. 3 soccer, 2 softball, baseball.
One thing we talked about, Mr. Hickman's on vacation, so he would have had some input into this as well. But one thing we talked about is, you know, so obviously you've got some parks and you've got some public works crews mowing the fields. Well, maybe instead of doing the more specialized stuff like, you know, the soccer fields and the baseball fields, maybe they just handle the big tractor with the bat wings mowing the big parts of the fields and in other areas. You know, we also have, you know, in different areas, we have some public utilities folks that are out there mowing the grass around their facilities. Well, maybe they should be focusing on working on public utilities things and having the public works ground crews doing all like facility stuff. So it's kind of getting away from, you know, all these little silos of jack of all trades where I work on pipes and I mow the grass around my building and this, to maybe, you know, making that part-time position a full-time position, and then, you know, which frees up the public works guys, grounds crews, to then do more stuff on other ground stuff, which then frees up the public utilities guys to focus on public utility stuff, not having to cut grass around their buildings just because they're there. But, you know, we've got all these new systems that are coming on, and have them focus on what their specialty is. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the thought moving forward. I think Mr. Spitzer, I think he would benefit from having someone specifically that he can direct for what he needs done at the parks. Because, you know, you get complaints of people saying, you know, the ball field is this or the soccer field is that, whereas, you know, sometimes when you're dealing with two different directors, they've got competing needs for what needs to be done. But if he needs something done at the park, well, then he's going to tell his person that this is the priority today. Mm-hmm. So,
and of course, Mr. Spitzer puts in a lot of his own personal time and
energy, does.
Mm-hmm. You know, doing those kinds of things, and maybe not having the opportunity to manage the growth the way he'd like to. So, it's maybe not the best use of his time.
Sometimes
to be out there cutting
when
the fields.
Cutting when I'm mowing, you know, just golf course for half a day, I kind of wonder sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's a necessity and it's just part of the job.
Mm-hmm. But
so me and two of my staff members, they usually get, we either get the mower, we'll go and we'll tackle 4 or 5 holes in the morning.
Do we not,
you know, if we need to
fund one additional person? Do we not?
Half-time.
A part-time.
This is the half-time.
Yes. So he's been, we had one person, they didn't work out, so we hired somebody else. He's started going. You can really see our trails in the fields. He's mowing them. He's cutting back the tall grass, you know,
Well, you think our high school cross country team, they go on all the trails
he maintained those because we've had 4 races so far out for this year, the cross country. So he went out there and cleared all those. So that's something Public Works didn't have to go do. That's a work order, and that saved them from spending time going to do that and that type of stuff.
And the work would be seasonal.
No,
I don't. So
certain things don't need to
you
be
can
done.
You can do certain things, but. You can, like, say, we're going to drag fields every day, you know, every week. Like, that way you don't get your grass growing up, you know, you can keep them maintained a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a constant, but mowing the soccer fields, no, you're not going to have to do that in November or whatever. But He could be cutting trails back.
He could be doing trail maintenance, cutting trees, doing diversion, like, you know, helping with
water diversion, like at the softball fields. I currently have T-post up with rope, trying to keep people from driving down. He could go put up my fence, you know, like I have around the soccer field. That'd be a project he could do during the winter. You know, there are stuff that.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Sorry.
There's plenty of stuff that they could find jobs to do. And yeah. If he runs out of stuff to do,
right.
He goes and helps the maintenance staff for the county.
But you know, there's signs that are down. There's mm-hmm. always there's bridge structures that are always
that he replaces.
I don't see there being not enough for that person to do. And I think then the other public works crew can then focus on other things and other buildings, which, you know, I think. Like I said, I just think it would be a benefit. And I think one thing, too, having a part-time position, it's great. I mean, it's fantastic. But sometimes getting someone in there and keeping them in that position is not as easy sometimes. So
that seems to make a lot of sense.
But so Mr. Spitzer may be bringing this position forward in a budget request for the next budget cycle.
And this is a question from Mr. Payne, but... You know, could a sort of a master plan of major improvements to Pleasant Grove be done as a general obligation bond that the citizens vote on?
The planning?
Yeah, well, not the planning. The actual, like, here's what we have, and we're bringing it to the voters to say, would you like to do this through this general obligation bond?
Well, I guess you could. It would require a referendum.
No, and that's fine. And I think, you know, one of the hesitations from mm-hmm. board members is, we'd like to do these things, but we're looking at it from our standpoint, mm-hmm. and maybe if we take it to the voters and let them decide, then that's their standpoint. And you know, if we had this plan that said we really want to take the park and move it to the next level, we've already made lots of investments, but we could either wait 20 years to get our pool, or we can put in this obligation bond now and get our pool or get our intergenerational mm-hmm. building. You know, and I'm not saying we do that this year, but I think if we start planning for that,
and maybe have
look
a,
at it,
take a date set where you want to shoot for maybe having this right. completed by. Because right now there's no date set for any of this stuff. It's just paper.
Yeah, it's just paper.
And if you give yourself a goal to shoot for, maybe that's a way to get some of the stuff completed.
And frankly, it's the easiest thing in the budget for us to continue to push out. And unfortunately, given a lot of the budget priorities that we have and a lot of the expenditures that we have, it's something that, you know, it's understandable that the board's hesitant to push some of those projects forward, but it doesn't mean that the citizens wouldn't be willing to, you know, maybe have to go down that route. So I think it's something mm-hmm. we can bring to their attention. You know, I feel like some of that's percolating, and there are, you know, as the demographics of the county are changing, it was brought to my attention that, for example, the lake used to be 65% over 50 and, you know, 35% young. Now it's reversed. So we have a lot more younger people here that, you know, are looking for these kinds of amenities, and that we can serve them from there.
Yeah, and I have a lot of questions, like on the south side of the county, is that we don't have a swimming pool. Our children have no opportunity to learn how to swim. Camp Friendship has a pool. The lake has a pool.
I may be working with
FUMA used to let us come.
They've contacted me and maybe to have aerobics classes and so maybe open swim down there.
They used
in the
to
future.
Have lessons. They used to have lessons.
Yeah,
and
then
Spawn used to teach those lessons. So.
It's something
as
that
a short, you know, as a short term.
A thing. Public pool is something to look towards. Mm-hmm. I mean,
can I?
As we got the opportunity to do that.
People are taking out pools and putting in splash pads a lot more now.
Yeah, and I just lay that as the bigger part, you know. As
I was at a conference last month. There are people in Northern Virginia, they're taking out their pools and putting in splash pads. You don't have to have lifeguards.
Liability.
Your water, you get the thing, the water recycles.
Pools.
If you do it right, you can put this piece of equipment on, change it out in 5 years and put a new piece of equipment on. It looks like you got a new splash pad, but
what's
it doesn't
cost?
Change.
What's the general cost?
$250 to get one started, probably.
$250.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
With a couple extra zeros.
I can bring my water hose. We'll buy some plastic. Wet that thing down some slide, kid.
You get like an underground reusable water system. It's about $250 to start with.
The parking lot and the roads are going to be the big cost, the biggest cost.
Yeah, there's a lot of costs. That's the thing. Yeah. There are a lot of costs there, and if it was laid out for voters, they might say, "Yeah, let's do it."
Well, the only thing about that is you have to have a lot more detail.
Oh, I get that.
We'd have that cost, and
have specific plans of what buildings.
You have to say we want to build these certain amenities and this and blah blah blah.
Right. Yeah.
And maybe we look at,
and that's not without cost.
Oh no, I get
changing this or altering a little bit because our needs may have changed since 2011.
Because that's been a long time.
I'm sitting there to myself thinking about the flattest ground I know of, the biggest field, is on a school facility that we could talk to them about. One specific problem we know we're talking about is the soccer fields. And if we would work with the school system, the field behind Carisbrook is huge. And
Barely gets used.
If it does not get used, and we could do this to benefit not only us, but the schools as well. They'd have it during the daytime, weeks and nights. It would be ours. So,
well, and that one other thing that maybe I don't know if it's been talked about, kind of in our master building plans, is the intergenerational building potentially a place where we could house staff as well too, and incorporate that and look to see how we can make kind of kill two birds with one stone.
Yeah, I mean, we had talked about, and just kind of just nominally, as you're talking about things moving around, I mean, there was even some ideas of, let's just say that social services moved to a building close to the sheriff's office or something like that. The building that's there could then be somehow turned into like an intergenerational center because you already have the performing arts component of it there. You're close to parks, you're close to the baseball field, you're close to the school, so that could possibly be a building that could then transition into something like that without building a new one. I mean, but that's just kind of one idea. But
many of the folks that would be going there went there.
Like when we had our weight room downstairs, it was used. Like, and then we got rid of it.
We got the gym chair and stuff.
It was used. Like, it was. Right. I think we charged $40 for 3 months for a membership, and we had people coming. That's all I have. The next slide's just questions.
Any questions, Mr. Spitzer?
And again, this is some of the stuff he's talking about.
That's the CIP stuff. That's some of the stuff you'll see in the CIPs.
I'd like to see prices for specific parts of it. I mean, your idea of possibly doing it as a bond for the entire county and let the citizens
vote. Let the voters decide. It would take some planning, but I mean, I think, as has been highlighted, there's, some areas, certainly the maintenance of the fields was brought to our attention. And I think just rub people the wrong way because of the bond that we did from that standpoint. And it's a nice park, and we put a lot of time and energy into it. We don't want people thinking we don't want people thinking, we're not taking care of it because it's a very visible sign.
Well, like I said, if you have someone directly under Mr. Spitzer, then he can say this needs to be done.
And when I get the call that the lights, not mowed, I can take responsibility of that soccer field and get mowed fully. You know what I'm saying?
If we start talking about it more, then some of these CIP projects will come to fruition sooner than later.
You and I have talked before. I think if we do something like that, when we get that person in touch with Steve Sheridan that takes care of the fields for the county, because, we're widely known, we have the best fields around, and he can help that person get a plan for the seeding and the fertilizing.
If we can just aerate seed when it needs to be, the fescue will, our soccer field
is still riding there.
20 times different. You won't have the little holes that you have.
No, ma'am, he's there.
It needs to be maintenance, right?
It like you said, it just needs to be taken care of the right way, and then we got a leg stand. Thank you so very much.
Thank
you.
Good
job.
All righty. Stop
cutting
grass.
I'd like to pull I and J.
I would like to read it first. I'd like to read it first, please. Thank you, ma'am.
I
wasn't trying to be short with you, ma'am. Let me read it first. Then we'll pull. I'll ask you anything you want to pull. We'll pull.
Okay.
G. Minutes of September 18th, 2019. Ms. Solis. H. Proclaiming October Domestic Violence Prevention Month. Mr. Dahl. I, Girl Scout Gold Award Resolution, Ms. Megan Odell, Mr. Dahl. J, Girl Scout Gold Resolution, Amber House Connect, Mr. Dahl. K, School Zone Speed Limit Reduction at FCHS Resolution, Mr. Dahl. L, FY20 Property Damage Insurance, Baycorp, 11212 West River Road, Ms. McGyver. Now, what would you like to pull? What piece of what letter?
H, I, and J. What I
want to
say.
Well, hang on. Let's start with H. We're going proclaiming.
Okay.
All right,
I'll give that to Mrs. Booker instead of having to be Mrs. Mita.
The only thing that I'd like to read these resolutions,
yep,
and the only thing is we have a victims person in the Commonwealth, Sherry.
Yep.
And so once a year, we could, you know, we come up. She could
come
it.
Up and read it.
Okay. All right. Can I do the next one?
I thought you were going to read something.
I'm going to do I and J.
I, yes, ma'am.
For years, when I first got on this board, we used to do our Boy Scouts. And when they get the Eagle. And I always wondered where the girls, did the girls have a high award? So I was at Scottsville this past for Memorial Land the Reef, and this lady came up and said, Ms. Booker, I know you've been looking for, we are going to have two young ladies. So, Kelly, did you write this? I gave it to you, the Girl Scout thing?
We cobbled from the Boy Scouts.
Good. All right. So it's going to be
exactly the same now.
Yeah. October the 22nd, it'll be at the Efforts Church, at the gym. Can you pull up the resolution so that, I mean,
yes, ma'am.
I was so, and you got it right there.
There you go, ma'am.
Now, I
can pull it up for you, Mr.
Everybody Stahl. In here probably already read this because you all read your blood packets, right? So I probably don't need to read. I thought we'd have somebody from the audience, I mean, from the community. We don't have anybody, but I'm going to read it anyway. Okay. Whereas the Girl Scouts of the United States of America is an organization serving over 2.7 million girls, which was founded by Juliet Gordon Lowe in 1912. And whereas the Girl Scouts of the United States of America was founded to promote citizenship, training, and personal development. And whereas the Gold Award is the highest achievement award in Girl Scouting and symbolizes outstanding accomplishments in the areas of leadership, community service, career planning, and personal development. And whereas Amber House Connect, did I say that right?
And yes. Megan Odell.
And Megan Odell has completed all the requirements for receiving the Girl Scout Gold Award. And whereas Girl Scout Troop 2047 will be convening a Gold Award ceremony on October the 22nd, 2019 at 6:30 p.m. at Effort Church Family Living Center, Parma, Virginia. And whereas the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors fully supports the program of the Girl Scouts of America and recognizes the important services they provide to the youth of our county. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors joins Amber and
Megan's
families and friends in congratulating them on, it says her, on her achievement, the award of gold award status, and acknowledges the good fortune of the county to have such an outstanding lady as one of its citizens. And then we have all of us signing, saying yay, nay. And this is it. This is the first time that I can remember to go to war. And it is going to be my pleasure. You're going to be there too, Miss Eva?
Oh, yes.
We're going to be right. You do one, I do one. Okay?
You're actually the second and third. The other House Connect daughter got hers 2 years ago.
Yes, but they didn't let us know.
Miss Elise actually wrote it.
Oh. But that's quite an honor that
absolutely
that they
and a lot of dedication, a lot of work,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of Girl Scout cookies.
A lot of work.
I think I bought from both of them.
Yeah, a lot of cookies.
All righty. Anything else need to be pulled?
No, I want to discuss Blue Mountain Road on 620 that we had talked about before with VDOT on the 5. subdivision, five lot subdivision.
Yeah, Mr. Miles.
I'm right here.
Mr. Miles is working with Mr. Mills.
Mr. Mills, who actually works for VDOT and UVA Research Center. Yes, I've been working with Mr. Mills, Andy Mills, and also Janice Sheffield.
Shiflett.
And what stage are we in now?
Very beginning stages. In fact, since Mr. Mills, when he came and spoke to you all last time, since he works with VDOT, he's asked to kind of step away from it. So now I'm kind of working with the folks at the Louisa Residency, Mark Wood and John Wilson. So with this is very, it's a road that's probably 40-some years old.
Right.
It's a very, when you drive it, it's basically a driveway. So it would be
But it has 50-foot right-of-way, as I understand.
We're looking into that, yes, sir.
I was only told that. I didn't see it on the document.
We're doing
But it has to have a 50-foot right-of-way.
It would have
With five houses.
Yes, sir. But the builder originally, you know, that type of information.
And I'll ask the question I asked before. Maybe you've had time to research it. What is the footage you have to have on each one of those houses on that road?
On the new road, that would be accepted.
Five houses.
Right. Yeah. Right now, we just have, you know, like out on the
main. Is it 200 or 300 or 400 foot on the dirt road now? What kind of footage do they have in front of their houses?
Well, it's different than what we require now.
What is that? What is the footage on those?
Yeah, that's 200. Yeah, that's
200 feet.
On a private road, correct?
Well, that's what I'm asking,
yes,
because
sir.
It's five house,
yes,
minor subdivision.
Yeah, so
it's 200 feet.
And working with Mr. Payne, that would also, for VDOT to take it in, and then that would change from a private street to
sure.
a public road.
Sure.
Yes, sir.
This is not a simple project.
It would be costly for the homeowners.
It would be very costly.
Well, it's not just the cost.
Correct.
This is complicated because we need to make sure what's the status of the right of way. I don't know anything about the history of this.
I really don't either, other than they had brought it up to me earlier, and I was trying to find out the status and what can or cannot be done.
I was here when the man brought it up at the board meeting.
Yes.
What I'm talking about is, well, I don't know whether the county even approved this subdivision, and if so, when. What were the requirements of the ordinance at the time?
Sure.
That's going to make a difference to VDOT's participation.
Well, sure, the county would have to prove it.
Well, not only that, but the VDOT will not participate in accepting certain subdivisions that weren't brought to standards.
Mm-hmm. Well, the density.
That's understandable.
Yeah.
Sorry?
The density's not even there on that particular road.
Well, it's three houses a mile.
Oh, okay.
So,
generally, excuse me, Mr. Pamzar. Generally, what Mr. Wood has told us, and he's written this in an email, that the county general funds would be used. The county's general obligation funds, okay? So we're starting off with, right now, that they're not putting anything into the kitty.
Funds for that.
No.
For minor subdivisions?
Yeah, they're...
They don't have money? They don't put that
in? It depends on the situation.
Yeah.
It depends on the situation, Bill.
We are looking into it at the beginning phases. Mr. Miles has been in contact with the folks, so they're aware that this is moving forward, although it's not lightning quick, but it is moving forward, and they have been in contact.
One of the issues you got with this is, what's the nature of the ownership of the road, and it's not just the roadway itself. I've run into this problem before, where you had old subdivisions that were supposed to be public roads and weren't brought in, you know, 50 years ago. They want to bring them in now, and the problem is they don't have things like drainage structures and drainage easements, things like that.
What the hell?
Not to mention the fact, of course, to be minimum width of the right of way.
And we would also be setting precedents for other roads that may be not sufficient that we would end up paying for.
Well, that's right, and
that's awesome.
One of the things is, was this done at a time when the county regulated these things? If it was, then you're going to be preferring this group of people over another group of people. I suspect this is not a matter of 40 years. This is probably like 75 years.
Yeah,
That land was, all that land went together. There's about 1,000 acres across from there, and it had something like 300 acres on the other side. And all that was developed into that, because I lived right close to that, and I saw all that go on.
You're illustrating exactly my point, is we need to know a lot about the history of this. Because VDOT simply won't take certain of these roads. They won't do it. And I can't remember which ones are which, but it's going to depend on how it was actually developed.
Right. In fairness to the residents that live on the road, this is kind of bringing it full circle from what Mr. Putman spoke about earlier, is they're aging. John can't go down that road and no longer will go down that road. So we're dealing with that aspect of it. So, you know, that's what's bringing it to the forefront for the residents and for some of their children, because they're asked to take them, you know, so that kind of thing. So,
well, they brought up the issue, and all I'm wanting to do is get some answers and get those answers back to the people. Sure. That's where I am right now.
Yeah, well, the people have been contacted, so they've...
Well, I was called again, you know, like 3, 4, 5, 6 days ago, so maybe somebody could touch base with them again.
It was
the woman I left you a phone number.
Janet Schiffler.
Yeah. And I said, you know, I didn't know the status at that time.
Douglas,
we know
just
more right
that.
Now.
Yes.
You know.
I've been working with Mr. Mills and then found out that they were kind of working separately. So I'm going to be back in touch with them.
Because I spoke to Mr. Schiffler the last board meeting, literally probably that morning prior to the board meeting. So.
Do we have a lot of places like that? I mean, you know,
We don't know what it's like.
Oh,
I
have a family that live up on old drive-in theater. That's 220-foot Tippetown Road.
Yeah.
All the way down the end, there's a road's horrible. The mama was older and they couldn't get rescue squad. Yeah, and they did. I got in contact with the owners on both sides, and Mr. John, he was in New York, but he sent someone down to drag the rope. Now, they put another house down there. I don't know how they got the house down that road. So it's about 4 houses down there in the road. It's terrible. It's nothing.
That kind of situation exists all over the county.
Yeah.
In every county.
That's one of the reasons they talked about getting a smaller rescue squad, is to be able to fit it down into roads like that, because I've driven into some where somebody gets out and just watches the corners and say, okay, don't drag. I have a lot more than one. Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty. One thing I'd like to ask is, and I probably should have done this before, I see we're proclaiming October Domestic Violence Month. Also mentioned about it being Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. Something that the county does. I just want to say that just because that's what I lost my sister to in March.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, similar, I was going to bring up a new business, is it's Lix.
Well, hang on, let's get there.
Well, I mean, it's just similar to what you're saying, but that's fine.
Yeah, about doing that.
The Lix 50th anniversary is this year, and I think, you know, it'd be a goodwill gesture if we recognize them in some form or another and invited them down and recognize their contributions to the county.
All right, is there any unfinished? Oh, hang on, I'm sorry. So, we're done with the consent agenda. Do I have a motion?
So made.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, second by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Is there any unfinished business? Okay, how about new business?
As mentioned, unless board members object, I would ask the staff to just write a proclamation or something along those lines.
Just to recognize
invite
them, it as being
invite
like
the board
old.
To come down and receive it, or the chair of the board or whatever, and the general manager.
General manager.
I don't know if I maybe skipped. I don't know if it's an unfinished business or not, but I think last month I sent out an email to board members about the Emancipation Proclamation. Stone. And we have a picture here of the Confederate, and I was wondering if the Emancipation picture, or we had to do them both together. I mean, you can keep that one there, it can go somewhere else. Because I think it is an important stone in movement, and my way of saying for them to be in the same picture, because I think it gives a good message, because we've had so much about removing this and removing the other, and that's not my intent and you all's intent. And as we remove anything, we want to see togetherness.
It is the history of our country.
History of our right. So that was one thing.
All right.
If the board wants to direct staff, do they want just a separate picture or one where they're together?
I don't know what would be.
I'd just do a separate picture.
Okay.
You'd
have to do a split one.
Yeah. You might have to pick stitches. One in the middle, one on this side, one on that. If you did the same.
It's hard to get them both
because they're so far.
Yeah, I think they're a good
they're far. Distance.
Yeah, and you won't know what you're looking at.
Right, they're too small.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
All right, any other new business? Alrighty, hearing no other new business, I will now open the second round of public comments. Anyone wishing to speak to the board, please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak to the board at this time? Seeing none, I will now close the second round of public comment. Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move the Savannah County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting for certain provisions of Section 2.2-3711A5, Section 2.2-3711A6, and Section 2.2-3711A19 of the Code of June 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing prospective industry, investment of funds, and public safety.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We are now in closed session. Thank you all very much.
All right. Closed meeting be adjourned with the Savannah County Board of Supervisors to be again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge, when only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950, as amended, and to only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were discussed or considered in the meeting.
Thanks. Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Booker. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Do we have a motion to adjourn this meeting?
Until
4 o'clock. 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock? We'll go 4.
Whatever you want.
4.
All right, we'll go 4 o'clock on the 16th of October.
All right.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
A motion made by Ms. Booker to adjourn the meeting and reopen it at 4 o'clock on the 16th of October. Seconded by Mrs. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passed 5-0. We are adjourned for the night.
You don't have to have a special meeting.